Senators vote today on a controversial pick for the Federal Reserve's Board of Governors. From Marketplace, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio, who's on assignment. The Senate Banking Committee today votes on two nominations to the Federal Reserve's Board of Governors, Judy Shelton and Christopher Waller, both economists. Shelton's nomination is controversial. She's been, in the past, a proponent of the gold standard and favors reducing the Federal Reserve's powers, coordinating more with the White House. Karen Petru is a managing partner at Federal Financial Analytics and joins us to talk about it. Good morning.
Morning, Sabri.
What would the nomination of Judy Shelton mean for the independence of the Federal Reserve?
Not much, in my opinion. Monetary policy, which is where the independence is particularly critical, is made by the Federal Open Market Committee, and that is 12 people, of whom the Fed governors are only 7. Where she could be really influential are the decisions the Fed board makes, which are the regulatory and fiscal ones. And I think she might be significant and certainly a dissenter on several key initiatives the Federal Reserve Board of Governors has been pursuing for the last 20 years or so.
Any ones that you're thinking of in particular?
She, I expect, will be much more of a hands-off regulator than the Fed. She, in the past, has opposed things as iconic as FDIC insurance. I think she'll lose on those votes, but she will be raising very important issues. I think some of them should be discussed. Much of what she advocates, I don't think, should be adopted, but I think she will be a very different and challenging voice on the Fed.
Karen Petru is managing partner with Federal Financial Analytics. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
After a marathon 4 days of at times acrimonious negotiations, European leaders in the early morning hours reached a deal on an economic rescue package for EU nations battered by the pandemic. My Marketplace colleague, the BBC's Victoria Craig, is in London. Hi, Victoria.
Hey, Sabri.
So what did these 27 leaders agree to?
Well, they've officially signed off on a plan to distribute $850 billion to member countries to help them recover from the impact of shutdowns, loss of tourism, and loss of local spending during this coronavirus crisis. And they'll raise this money through the first ever collective bond issuance program. Usually, the EU prefers member states to raise money individually.
One of the big sticking points was whether to loan money to struggling countries or just give those countries money. Why was that such a big deal?
Well, southern nations like Italy and Spain, which have been badly hit by the coronavirus pandemic, had advocated to get a bigger portion of the overall funding to be distributed through grants. That would have meant that they wouldn't have to take on extra debt after they've already kind of slowly recovered from the Eurozone debt crisis from several years ago. The so-called Frugal Four group of nations in the north, those are the Netherlands, Austria, Sweden, and Denmark, with support from Finland, they wanted more control in how the money is distributed. In the end, leaders agreed to allocate more money in grants than in loans, but the total amount of money that will be distributed in grants is more than $100 billion less than was originally floated back in May. So it was sort of a win-win situation for everyone.
My Marketplace colleague, the BBC's Victoria Craig in London, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Let's do the numbers. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 284 points. That is 1.1%. The S&P 500 is up 0.7%. The NASDAQ up 0.1%. And the 10-year Treasury yield is at 0.61% this morning. Coca-Cola says its revenue plunged 28% in the second quarter. Half of Coke sales come from stadiums, movie theaters, places where people gather in big groups. Coke still reported a profit, though, $1.8 billion. According to statistics gathered by the main French phone company, more than 1 million people fled the Paris region at the end of March to spend the lockdown in the countryside. Now, some realtors say they're seeing a surge in home sales, indicating some people want to make their move to the countryside permanent. John Lawrenson reports from Corrèze in very rural central France.
Lakitte's family at the lake in the place Philippe Lakitte says they're starting to call home, a little village called Pérols-sur-Vézère, nearly 300 miles south of Paris.
We left Paris in a bit of a panic the day President Macron announced the lockdown. We were on the road when we heard the announcement on the radio. I'm a bit fragile health-wise, and we thought, correctly as it turned out, that the virus was going to hit Paris hard and that being stuck in a city apartment for months on end would be hell.
First of all, they were in a bed and breakfast, says Lakitte. Then a place they rent by the month. Now they're looking to buy, which the kids are into as well. Daughter Madeleine is 13.
It's calmer and less stressful than Paris. There isn't the pollution, and maybe if we move to the country, I'll have a dog on riding lessons.
Lakitte is a graphic designer. Teleworking's easy. Many Parisians looking to leave the capital don't want to go so far. One real estate website says there's been a doubling of demand for houses an hour outside the big cities. In the Chevreuse Valley, 40 miles west of Paris, real estate consultant Joëlle Chaussier shows a house she's in the process of selling.
Out of the 10 houses I've sold since the end of the lockdown on May 11, half have been to Parisians. It wasn't even 1 in 10 before.
Back with the Lakitte family, it's dinner time. They're eating out in the garden, a luxury they didn't have in Paris. And they just visited a house they might be interested in buying, $73,000. They'd be lucky to get a one-room apartment for that in Paris. In Corrèze, France, I'm John Lawrenson for Marketplace.
And in New York, I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.